Hello and welcome back to a brand new episode of Scottish Football Covered. We have a jam-packed episode for you today, including Celtic, Rangers, but more importantly, St. Johnstone. So get in touch with us on Twitter, at SF Covered, and join in on the conversation. But in the meantime, today I'm joined by the one and only Mac. Mac, how are you today?
I'm good, I'm really good. It's been an exciting weekend of football. I don't want to say shocked, but it's definitely leaving it all in the last couple of games. But more importantly, how are you? You sound like you've got carrying a bit of a cold.
I don't know how you noticed that. Was it the giant sniffling, the sneezes? But yeah, I sometimes get embarrassed to admit that you can get a cold in the summer. But in my defence, on the bus, could hear a lot of sniffles. So I think it's just something that's going around Glasgow. Hopefully nothing too serious. But I will tell you what, instead of me talking about all my disgusting phlegm, sneezing and bits and bobs, I'll just run people through the results of the weekend. In the top six, Celtic beat Hibernian 3-1. That was a fairly easy victory for them, although Hibernian did open the scoring. Rangers were comfortable 4-0 winners against Aberdeen. I think once they got going, they just couldn't really stop for Barry Ferguson's first win at Ibrox. Would you believe it? And Dundee United, they, I don't know, what's the opposite of strength to strength? Weakness to weakness. They fell away at home to St Mirren. Stevenson Robinson, someone we'll talk about later on. Does he deserve a little bit more credit than he's currently getting? Meanwhile, in the bottom six, Hearts were 3-0 winners at Motherwell in what you could say is maybe a little bit of a dead rubber, but not so much as we might discuss. Kilmarnock, 3-2 winners against Dundee. That was a fantastic game. Well, you wouldn't have thought it beforehand. It turned out to be one of the games of the weekend. But the game of the weekend in my mind, St. Johnstone's 2-1 victory over Ross County. We all thought St. Johnstone were dead and buried. Not so much, as we'll discuss. But first, let's kick off with the Rangers. This was a symbolic victory for Barry Ferguson. It seems the beggar's belief to say that this was their first victory at Ibrox, as I mentioned. 4-0, the scoreline. Mac, is it a fair reflection on the action?
Probably. I wouldn't say it was a 4-0 game to Rangers, but I think it was probably a game Rangers deserved to win, especially going into that second half. It was a different performance from what we've seen. When Barry Ferguson has been successful, and bear in mind it has been quite a limited success at Rangers so far for him, they've enjoyed less of the ball when it's usually been against the bigger teams. This is probably the first example we've had of a comfortable victory under Barry Ferguson, and at the same time enjoyed out large spells of possession. I think the stats, it was something like 65% or 70% possession, 70% possession Rangers had. So 4-0, I don't want to say it flatters Rangers, because they deserve to win, and probably I think Aberdeen could have done a lot better, and I think Aberdeen fans would have expected a lot better going to Ibrox, considering the form Rangers are on under Barry Ferguson at home as well. But it's a deserving victory for Rangers, and we've not said that a lot of times, especially as of late.
No, you're right. And there's an element to the Aberdeen performance that feels like they fell away. But one element I wanted to touch on, first of all, was Cyril Dessers. Now, Winston Churchill once said of the Soviet Union, it's a riddle wrapped in a mystery inside an enigma. But he could have just as easily have been talking about Cyril Dessers. That performance was basically encapsulates his performance in the season so far, doesn't it?
No, absolutely is. I don't think we've had a striker like him in Scottish football before. I used to compare him to Philip Sebo, but he's kind of shut me up a little bit. If you might know, Philip Sebo is a bit of a Scottish football icon because of how bad he was. I think if you missed a sitter when you're out playing with your mates, everybody would shout Sebo. So actually, I used to compare this to, for all the chances that he does miss, he will score one eventually, whereas Philip Sebo faded into obscurity. That's the best way to describe him as an enigma. There was a debate on Super Scoreboard the other week, who would you rather have, Adam Ida or Cyril Dessers? I'm not going to get into that debate just now because we're going to talk about Adam Ida later in the show, but it is, I don't even know how to describe what it's like watching him. I'm glad that he doesn't play for a team I support, because it would infuriate me despite the amount of goals he scores. But then I think as well, are we being too harsh on the guy? Because a striker's job is to score goals, and so often when Cyril Dessers does score, Rangers ultimately end up winning in the end. So Are we as a whole being too harsh on Cyril Dessers? Because look, he's doing what he's paid to do, you know what I mean, Finley?
Well, I think maybe the argument from fans is, well, at least on the negative side, is if he gets given so many chances, of course he's going to put that many away. But the only way to really show, if it's Cyril Dessers, if he's a problem, is if you put someone else in front. Say he left at the end of the season, they got another strike and he didn't deliver. I think fans might regret the stick he's been given over 2 seasons, because let's not forget, this is an ever so slightly dysfunctional Rangers that he's performing in. But a few bright sparks, and I think Dessers might be considered to be among them. I would say maybe the brightest of all is Raskin. I mean, I don't know if you disagree, he has been fantastic this season, and I reckon there will be a lot of European vultures circling the Raskin wagon.
No, I absolutely agree. I think he's probably been Rangers' best player this season, if not the latter half of the season. He showed it in games against Celtic at Ibrox and at Celtic Park. His quality. It's a weird one. I think if you'd said, say, 6 months ago, will he be at Rangers next season, you'd probably say no, just because of Rangers' dire financial situation. With the impending takeover, look, nobody knows what's going to happen at Rangers next season. It's probably only going to be better things than what the summers that we've seen previously at Ibrox, but it will be up to the new owners if they can inject enough cash to. I don't know the sustainability rules and financial fair play and yada yada yada. But if they're in a position to keep Nico Raskin, I think they definitely will. And I think so often we hear this Rangers players who they should build a team around. We hear it all the time with their new shiny toy, but I generally think Nico Raskin, if they want to be ambitious in Europe and challenging for league titles again, Nico Raskin's got to be the guy to build that team around. And I think I don't know this for 100%. I think he even given the armband at some point this season as well, which speaks volumes of the guy because he's not been at Rangers relatively long. Like, I think it's only a season and a half, maybe 2 seasons. So to be getting the armband of a guy who the current captain's been there about 10 years, it just speaks volumes of the character they must be in the dressing room and the leadership qualities he possesses. And that's been a complaint to Rangers fans for so long, since they've been behind Celtic, that they've not got that band of winners and that band of characters. I think Nico Raskin kind of plays up to what Rangers fans expect. In the big games against Celtic, he's given it large to the Celtic crowd, and equally he's in for a tackle as well. So I think Rangers fans will want to keep him next season, and if Rangers are in a position to keep him, then I think they most certainly will.
Well, Rangers want to keep him, but do you think he wants to stay? I wonder if he might feel tempted, given how badly the season has gone for them, if he might be better suited elsewhere. Do you think that will be on his mind? Do you think there are clubs of this stature to tempt him away at the moment, or do you think he'll stick around for a year?
No, I think it will be in his mind that he can get a move, but if he's offered incentives from the new owners, like a bumper contract or whatever else, maybe even look, I don't know if he is official vice captain or not. I don't think he is. I think Jack Butler must be the official vice captain. But if he gets offered stuff like that, who knows what will sway him. But I think that's you always run the risk, Celtic and Rangers, when you sign guys from the continent or far beyond. You've got to kind of concede that you're more than likely going to be used as a stepping stone. You've seen Celtic have had that really good transfer model, buying low, selling high. Nico Raskin bought for £2 million. He was probably told when he signed, look, if you give it your offer a good 2 or 3 years, you can get help. You can help us out and help yourself, help your career out, and get that big move. And it probably will be on his mind. He's been a shining light in which has been quite a dark season for Rangers. So if there's interested suitors, I think he'll entertain it. But again, we don't know the position Rangers are going to be in this summer. But then player power is paramount these days as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. The game is gone, as they say. The game is gone. Now, where the game has not gone, on the other side of Glasgow, and that was at Celtic Park, where the league champions again have dispatched Hibernian. And let's not forget a resurgent, a very strong Hibernian side. They were comfortable winners. Nicholas Koen, Alameda, Rio Hatate, all responding to Martin Boyle's opener for the 3-1 victory. I think this just goes to show. With a Hibs team, arguably the second most in form at the moment in the league, on their day couldn't do anything to stop Celtic when they just get going.
No, yeah, absolutely. I think it was a bit of a lazy start to the game, I suppose, from both teams. I think Adam Ida had a couple of chances, then Martin Boyle had that chance that forced a great save for Kasper Schmeichel, who was back in his first game since that injury, got an international duty. Even when Hibs, they had that spell before the goal where they were probably the better team for that 5 or 10 minutes. But it just shows you how good Celtic are and how, when they turn it on like that, it was like how are you scoring 5 minutes before half time or 15 minutes before half time, and then you're to go 1-0 up and you go in behind. It just when Celtic turn it on, nobody gets near them. And is that good or bad for Scottish football? It's not for me to say. It's probably not a good thing, but Celtic can only do what they can. Can you still hear me?
Yeah.
I've clicked something and it's bloody there. I'll cut that out.
No, don't
I
worry,
thought
don't
we
worry.
cut that, but where was I?
Maybe it's bad for Scottish football.
Yeah. Is it a good or bad thing for Scottish football? Look, that's not for me to say, but Celtic can only do what they can, and what they can do is beat teams comfortably, and Hibs paid the price for that.
All credit, I think. At least a lot of credit, despite the defeat, is due to Hibernian. They have had a fantastic kind of end to the season. Again, they are 12 points behind Rangers. Actually, I think it's more now. I think it's 15. But they are very much in the hunt for that third spot, 3 points ahead of Aberdeen, and with a significantly better goal difference. So Aberdeen obviously losing. But the thing, the difference is about 20 goals. So winning their next game is imperative, and it could be the key to securing that third spot. Do you give them a good chance of doing that? Do you think it's, I mean, do you think the chips will fall in their favour?
Absolutely. I think I don't want to be a jinx, and I don't want Hibs fans to come with me with the pitchforks, but I think it's as good as done. Third place, you've got Celtic traveling to Pittodrie, expect them to win, and then Hibs. I don't want to disrespect St Mirren. They've probably got the easiest fixture. I know St Mirren have been fantastic. Post spot, we'll get into that as well, but I think it's looking too comfortable for Hibs to get third place. If there's a team in Scottish football that could bottle this, it would be Hibernian. They've coined that phrase, Hibs, that many times in their short history. But I don't see any other team finishing third. I think it's the stars have all kind of aligned for them for this third place finish in the European spot. You mentioned a 15 points behind Rangers. It just goes to show how damaging that start to the season was, because 15 points, that's five defeats. I know it's not easy to turn five defeats into wins, but if you at least they were losing games at the start of the season, which they should not have been losing at all. So even if you win three of them, you put pressure on Rangers, and you saw what this Rangers team is like under pressure this season. So I know it's been a fantastic turnaround for Hibs this season, but there might be a slight, I know it sounds crazy to say, there might be a slight element of frustration that they've not been able to push Rangers for that second spot. But then, with the start of the season, they would have bit your hand off for third place when they were 12th on the table, I suppose.
Well, the highs and lows of this season have been experienced by Hibernian, but not just the Edinburgh club. Someone I wanted to ask you about was Adam Ida. And this may seem like a stupid question, given the trophy cabinet that he is now assembling. But would you say Adam Ida has had a good season? I know that's a difficult thing to quantify, but I'm just a little bit on the fence, and I was wondering what you thought.
I would say good, not great. Which is harsh to say, because it's good and bad in its own rights. I think 20 goals, if you said to him at the start of the season you're going to score 20 goals, he probably would have took that, bearing in mind that he's coming in knowing he's going to be setting Federico Chiesa for the Hashi. Even after his departure, he's not really been Celtic's number nine. It's Daizé Maeda's move from left wing into centre forward. What does that say about Adam Ida? I don't know. He's good at what he does. Usually coming off the bench when you need a different dynamic up front, but There's a lot of elements he's got to work on in his game, similar to Cyril Dessers. He needs a couple of chances. I think the difference between him and Cyril Dessers is Adam Ayder normally doesn't get as many chances as Cyril Dessers does. I've not seen Adam Ayder. There was that game up in Dundee that springs to mind for Cyril Dessers. It was like 10 shots ahead and goal and scored the last one. I've not seen Adam Ayder have 10 goals, 10 shots in one game. So that's a debate for another day. But in terms of Adam Ayder's season right now, it has been good. He's been pivotal with Celtic's success, but I think even himself will be looking for improvement. But the potential's there. I know he is 24, so he's not quite wonderkid or whatever, but there is room for improvement, and I think it will improve next season. It all depends on Brendan Rodgers' plan for him.
No, absolutely true. And we'll move from one Edinburgh club to another, going from Hibs to Hearts. And after the not so surprised sacking of Neil Critchley, things seem to be on the up and up for the Jambos. They were 3-0 winners against Motherwell. I think it was a rather cagey start to the game, but Lawrence Shankland put in 1-2, and then 2 minutes later, Forrest added the third. For what ended up being quite a convincing win for Hearts and interim manager Liam Fox. It felt like, on the face of it, what I would call dead rubber central, but I don't know. Was there quite a lot riding on this, at least for Hearts?
For Hearts, potentially, I think Hearts and Motherwell, you obviously they could have fell into 11th, but it was always going to be unlikely. So they were two teams that had like been even space ever since match week 33. What was important for Hearts in the last five games of the season was to prove to the fans and prove to themselves that they know that this season hasn't been good enough. We can write chalk a line under it and then look. Put an improved performance in, which can give them confidence going into next season. Since the departure of Neil Critchley, those sort of performances have started to arise for Hearts, and especially for that man, Lauren Shankland. Is it as simple a formula as put Lauren Shankland up front and Hearts play well? I don't know, but it's worked for them the last two seasons, and it's worked for them the last two games as well. So I think that is it might have been as plain as a nose in your face, but that is the biggest mistake Neil Critchley made was playing Lauren Shankland in the 10. But Lauren Shankland's a guy, he would have played anywhere for Hearts. He probably would have played in goals if he got asked for. And we're going to have that debate again where his future's going to lie. I think that move to Rangers is probably sealed, but I think if they can commit his future, it would send a positive message around the club, especially with this investment they've got from Tony Bloom and then the potential hiring of Derek McInnes. I would back them for a top six finish, maybe even top four, top five. Who knows?
It's funny how things changed not so long ago. People were maybe slightly tired of Shankland and his goal rate and all the talk about him leaving to Rangers. And now all of a sudden, under Liam Fox, he is finding his form from last year. And there's a little bit of worry of where those goals are going to come from because, to be honest, Hearts are not a free-flowing goal-scoring machine. They've got about four or five strikers to choose from. And it's only now when Kabangu's cooled off a little bit and Shankland's refound form, but it's not been plain sailing for them up front. Now, in terms of players leaving, I don't think there is a sale bigger or more discussed this year than that of Lennon Miller. Now, there are no guarantees that he even is leaving, and we don't know where he's going. Rumor has been Serie A, but then just recently, Michael Vimmer says, "I've been speaking to people in the Bundesliga and I've been saying good things about Lennon Miller." That sale, people are predicting at least a fair few bob from it. Where do you think Motherwell should be spending that money? Because they're not like any other club in the way they are run.
I would like, well, I think first and foremost, somebody's got to go back into the playing squad, and they would be stupid to squander such an opportunity that they'll have it. Lennon Miller will be a record sale for Motherwell Football Club. That's a fact. I think the last record was another academy graduate, David Tumble, and that would he's gone for he went for about 3.25 million pounds to Celtic. Lennon Miller's probably going to go for at least double that. I've just mentioned there, David Tumble, academy graduate. You want to go even further back, you've got James McFadden, Jamie Murphy. Motherwell always bring through great Scottish players. And if they can put the money that they don't put into the playing squad into their youth academy, that would be such a wise investment for the future. And I think that's what they've got to do. They've already got such a strong academy. A £3-4 million investment into that will do them so much favours going forward. It's a risky strategy, of course, because there's no guarantees with your youth academy, and there's always the possibility, oh, this guy's playing well for them, other well youth player. The youth teams, Celtic or Rangers, snap him up. Bailey Rice, the prime example. But I would like to see a lot of investment into the youth academy, because it would be quite poignant. Lennon Miller, academy graduate, and then he funds the next generation of Motherwell youth players, you know what I mean? So ultimately, I'm not in charge of Motherwell's finances. They'll be glad glad of that. Hardly in charge of my own, but I would like to see, yeah, a lot of investment in the youth academy.
I don't think that is a bad idea. And I think maybe actually, if anyone from Motherwell is listening, Mac is essentially putting his CV out there for you. So get in touch. Hopefully you can offer him a job. Now,
Please, please.
please, listen, enough joking around. It's time to get serious. And no place more serious than Rugby Park. There is a lot happening there. And before we take a spin on the rumour mill, let's talk about the game itself. Kilmarnock not been a vintage season for them, but they did come away 3-2 winners. This was a cracker of a game. And to be honest, I couldn't have predicted it beforehand. I had a feeling Kilmarnock might edge it, but you never know with this Dundee side, given that they are much improved. Are we seeing that kind of Kilmarnock of old, Mike?
Yeah, we are for sure, and I think that it's Derek McInnes said post match it's just came too late for them in the season, which is absolutely bang on. They've had bad. I don't want to put it down to bad luck, because well, there were some injuries, but at the start of the season there was just poor discipline, and they weren't able to manage playing in Europe at the same time as domestic football, which hindered them massively at the start of the season. So it is good. It's good to see them finally turn that around. I think the squad, we always kind of thought when they were 11th, like this squad is way too good to go down. I think Danny Armstrong's remembered how to score goals again. That's three in his last four, albeit two for the spot, but just still doesn't matter how you score them. It's a good team. Before I'm not going to jump it too much in the bit, Derek McInnes, because I think we're going to talk about him in just a minute. But I think to beat Dundee, it's always a hard game, home or away. I think you never know what to expect for Dundee, which makes them such a difficult opponent, you know what I mean? So, and I always quite like it with Derek McInnes plays Tony Docherty, because they had 10 years like managing an assistant at Aberdeen, so it's kind of like the Jedi versus Master sort of vibes at the dugout. But Derek McInnes will be glad to get one over on Tony Docherty for sure.
I really appreciated that Star Wars reference. I wish we'd recorded this, or even that game had been played on the fourth. We could have really hammed that up and made something of it.
We could direct
But
the acid at it.
I would, yeah, I would have. I'd love to ham a joke down someone's throat. But we've spoken about Kilmarnock. This Dundee side, I was curious to ask, and again, put your CV out here. How can they progress? From being, I mean, things were looking so promising at one point, and they are just, it seems, back to where they constantly find themselves, and that's the relegation dogfight. How can they pull themselves away from that? How can they just take that next step? I mean, it's not easy. Once you're in the bottom six, you're never too far, but it feels like it's they're kind of that bottom three looks so familiar. St. Johnstone, Ross County, Dundee, it's the why always you?
Yeah, it's weird, because it doesn't matter. Seemingly right now, it's like whatever you throw at Dundee, they sort of dodge it. Like Luke McCowan leaves on deadline day, they might have just got out the best end of this. It looks like they might escape 11th. Despite that, I don't even think they've properly replaced them even now. Lyle Cameron's the next Luke McCowan go to Rangers. They're probably not going to be able to replace him, and at some point your luck's going to run out. Simon Murray, he's not going to be scoring goals forever. He's 33 years old. So the main issue is not being able to adequately replace the huge players that they're losing. And Luke McCowan didn't go for peanuts. Luke McCowan probably was undervalued at £1 million, but that's £1 million that Dundee never had before. It's £1 million that the teams around them that don't have. that's got to be invested in some way, shape, or form. And I think what the Dundee owners seem to, they, I think it's, they've got American owners and American stakeholders, and this, I don't know. I'm not an expert on the Dundee ownership, but it seems like they've kind of got one eye on this new stadium project that they've had for a while, and it might just be a case, simple case, get your priorities straight. Like, invest in a playing squad. I know it's hard to attract players to this league, especially when you're at the foot of the table, but it's you're dicing with danger every season, as you says, that it's always them and the usual suspects at that end of the table, and you can't just rely on, oh, we'll come back up, because we've seen like better teams like Hibs, even Rangers haven't came up from the Championship at the first time asking. So it's important that you don't rest on your laurels and invest so this doesn't keep happening.
No, there is definitely a trick in there that someone is missing because I don't think Dundee fans particularly appreciate that turmoil. What they will appreciate even less is the loss of Lyle Cameron. You touched on that. I mean, what kind of player are Rangers? What should they expect from a player like Lyle Cameron? He scored two goals. He is something maybe to be excited about. I know he doesn't seem like he will slot into that starting 11, but I think people might be surprised.
Yeah, I agree. I think he was nominated for Young Player of the Year last year, so it's not just a. I know Rangers signed him in January. It's not just off the back of a good 6 months. If you've not really kept tabs on Lyle Cameron's career, and you're a Rangers supporter, you're getting a good player. Does he walk out of that starting 11? No. Even if the guys like, even if you lost Diamande and Raskin, you would still be looking to replace these two, and it wouldn't be Lyle Cameron. What he does offer you, though, is crucially is a dependable option to bring on. I didn't think Conor Barron was ready for the step up. So with Dano, I think Conor Barron's been excellent for Rangers this season, and this is a similar sort of move. It would be lazy to compare this, but I'm going to do it anyway. It's like Luke McCowan at Celtic. It's he knows they're not going to be a starter, but they're going to make an impact when they do play. And I think it's a nice transfer. I don't know if Lyle Cameron supports Rangers or like Luke McCowan supports Celtic, but there's a lot less pressure this way, and I think you kind of want them to succeed more. But look, it's not going to be easy for Lyle Cameron. It's a big step up move. So a lot of other players, you can put a similar sort of move, Greg Stewart, Greg Doherty, Scott Wright, and it's not worked out for them at Rangers. There's a lot more pressure playing for one of Glasgow's big two rather than one of Dundee's big two. So I hope, well, I don't want to say it, I hope it works out for him, but I think there's a massive opportunity for him there, and if he can stake his claim, he would be doing himself the world of good, and his possibility of getting into the Scotland squad, that open, it opens up so many doors going to the Rangers as well. So it's going to be a big miss for Dundee, and crucially the even more dependable option for Rangers than what they currently have.
Well, I mean, that temptation to play European football and showcase your ability, I think maybe there is something commendable about trying to challenge yourself in a squad like the Rangers one. And like you said, it might not work out, but that step up is something you maybe people would like to see more of in the Scottish game, just looking around rather than searching abroad. And I think that might be what is happening currently in Edinburgh. Rumours have it that Derek McInnes is talking to Hearts. He missed one of the pre-match conference for Kilmarnock, and there were discussions, and now it seems to be fact that he is the front runner for the Hearts job. Mac, is this a good idea, or should they maybe look further? Have they been burnt by a kind of experimental appointment in Critchley?
I think it's a good appointment. I think I touched on it last week. I think it's good for maybe, I don't want to say a blessing in disguise, because Kilmarnock have held in a good bit of form now, and Derek McInnes has done a great job for Kilmarnock. Let's not get it twisted. But I have said multiple times I think he's reached that ceiling with Kilmarnock. So his record in Scottish football is fantastic. I know he's not got as many trophies as he would quite have liked. He's only got the one, I think, a League Cup with Aberdeen. Unless you include the championship title with Kilmarnock, but I think it's a astute appointment from Hearts, and As you said, they have been burnt a bit by Neil Critchley. So they've went down a route. It's not worked out for them. Credit for them to try and I tip my hat off to them. Denny McInnes, you know, Scottish football inside out. He's been, it's no surprise he's been linked with Sunderland jobs, Rangers jobs, countless other jobs. I think he was even tipped for the Scotland job loosely at one point. So it is, I think it's an impressive appointment. I'm looking forward to watching Hearts next season under Denny McInnes. I'm talking like it's happened. He's not denying it, and it's not a good look for him if he does stay. I think he's, the way he's talking in his press conferences is a bit like a come and get me, please. Like, there's been no contact. That just, to me, that's like, contact me, please. That's the way I've interpreted it. But I think it's going to happen. It should be, probably done in the next week or so. Probably done once the season comes to a close, I'd imagine.
Will be interesting to see where Kilmarnock go from there, but they have lost their fair share of managers in the past, and I'm sure they'll bounce back no matter what. However, we are very much focused on the present and the past. This weekend, a fantastic result for St. Johnstone. I think I mentioned in the introduction, St. Johnstone very much cast adrift, dead and buried by our not so fantastic predictions, but 2-1 win sees them just 3 points behind Ross County, five away from Dundee. The fantastic game for them. I remember watching the Hibs defeat, thinking this team had lost it, or maybe they were just throwing that game to focus on another. But what a result this could prove to be.
Absolutely. I think I've all of us at one point had them dead and buried, and look, who could blame us? As you said, that Hibs result, St Johnstone looked like an amateur team playing in a cup tie. But it was a must win, quite literally. If they never won, I think they were down or all but down, depending if it was a lose or a draw. It says a lot more about Ross County for me. If you can't beat St Johnstone to break your duct of however many defeats is in a row, I think it might be seven now for them. Look, the games don't get easier. They've got Dundee away, and then they're playing Motherwell. You could say the same about St Johnstone. They're playing Hearts, and then Dundee as well. It sets up an entertaining climax to the end of the season. It's an unexpected one. No one would have expected St Johnstone to still be in it with two games to go, considering how far adrift they were. Early, not even early in the season, a couple matter of weeks ago. So, as much as I'm giving credit to St Johnstone, though, it's a lot of it is down to how poor Ross County have been, and if they go down, they've got only got themselves to blame. It's been an absolute disastrous end to their campaign, and I fear it's only going to get worse for them. Automatic relegation, I can't even call it at this point.
Well, Don Cowie said, can't go feeling sorry for themselves, but they will have to spend a little bit of time licking their wounds. That's, I think the one thing that surprised me most about Ross County was their goal record. 36 games, 35 goals scored. That seems like a fairly damning number. I mean, St. Johnstone have only scored two more, but how do you score fewer goals than you've played games? And given it feels like every so often Ronan Hale is putting them away, it seems like they are just, in a lot of trouble if they can't going to turn that around very soon. Now, I'm going to ask for your prediction, given that you do possess the crystal ball and you've refused to share it around the group. I'm going to ask who finishes bottom, given I'll tell you St. Johnstone play Hearts away and then host Dundee, and Ross County have Dundee away and Motherwell at home, and a 3-point lead on St. Johnstone. But who do you think finishes bottom?
I think it's going to go down to the it's going to go down to the wire. I'm looking at the table just now. The goal difference is almost identical as well. I think it's going to go down to the final day. I think both teams are going to lose the next match, and then in doing that, that puts Dundee 5 points ahead of Ross County, and then meaning they have not a lot to play for. They can kind of put the feet up for the last game of the season, and then that's where I see St Johnstone getting a win, Ross County falling to their ninth defeat in a row and going down automatically. I'm going to say Ross County 12, St Johnstone 11th. Go to your local bookmakers and out and put it on, because I've just, as Finlay says, I don't share my crystal ball. I've just shared what it's reading right now.
And make sure you invoice Mac as well if you get it wrong, but give him his 10% if you're right. Now, I'm going to be cheeky. I'm going to add on another question. I don't want to push the kind of mysticism here. Which of the two, if relegated, is more likely to come back up?
I would say Ross County, and there's no reason or rhythm to why I think that. I just think they've got a better track record of, well, I wouldn't say a better track record. They've failed them once, and I think they came back up straight away. Whereas we don't know what St Johnstone are going to be like. We've not seen them in the Championship for over 15 years, so it's not easy to bounce back up of, but bounce back up from for sure. But I just Ross County don't seem like a team to me who can stay in that division for that long. Whereas as for St Johnstone, I can see them falling in the same trap. Teams like Dunfermline have to name one, but not a few. So, long story short, yeah, I'd say Ross County have a more chance of bouncing straight back up out of the two of them. But then I actually think there's a possibility, a strong possibility, both of them go down this season as well. So we might see the answer to that question by this time next year.
A clear, quick, and simple response. Now, let's swiftly move on to another game. And the final one that we will be covering, and that is Dundee United versus St Mirren. We've spoken about the Ross County collapse, but Dundee United have a pretty good one of their own, don't they? They have the team that was looking like they'd finished third. They've not bottled it. Let's not forget they are the promoted side from the Championship, but the fans are not going to be happy with the way things are going, are they?
No, not at all. I think Jim Goodwin's always said that. There's always been an element of Dundee United support that have not really been on side with him. I think there was a stages of last season when they were getting promoted that they like to be bottling that as well, and it kind of get a bit ugly. But it's I just you've got to bear in mind. I know they're a massive club, but they are just promoted, and I don't want to say they're in rebuild because they're not really. But there is a bit of stability, but. It's just Jim Goodwin's record in the spot, especially with Dundee United, just isn't it pretty? But that year they went down, they lost all five. They're on course to lose all five at least, and now it's only getting harder. I think their best chance of points is probably at home to Aberdeen on the last day of the season. I think the only saving grace I never really I felt went in that race of third. I thought Dundee United are probably going to finish fifth. I think it was always out of Hibs and Aberdeen done it to this outside chance, but I gave them the benefit of the doubt, and I thought St Mirren are too far away to catch them. I know it's only 2 points in between them now, but their only saving grace is say the Mirren's next two games are I don't see them getting any points. I think they've got Hibs and Celtic, I know for a fact there's away on the last day of the season, and that's typically a day where Celtic sort of have a party before they lift the trophy, so I don't see St Mirren getting any points, luckily for Dundee United, but that doesn't excuse how horrific they've been post-split.
No, it's been a difficult time for them. And you said fans divided on Jim Goodwin. I don't think I will be going out on a limb and saying that St Mirren fans are incredibly grateful to have Stephen Robinson on their staff. I know he gets praise, but I still feel as though he is underappreciated for the rebuilding he has to do. It feels like players come and go in that squad. We just lost Alassania. And now it's Mandron and the Younger. If they start playing well, they'll go. And he's always doing it on a shoestring budget. Am I being too generous, or is he underappreciated here?
No, I think you're bang on. I think he deserves a lot of credit. I don't know if he's ever had his name in contention for like Manager of the Year awards or anything. Probably has to cut his teeth into a bit more like the trophies sort of. I don't think his record in cup competitions is all that great. I know he got Motherwell two cup finals in the 1 year and just kind of met an unstoppable Celtic side in 2018 or whatever year it was. But he deserves tremendous credit. I think his job with St Mirren might quite be better than his job with Motherwell. I think top six 3 years in a row for a side who'd never been top six in their history is unbelievable. And I think I said it in the pod a couple of weeks ago. I think he sells himself quite short as well. I think when he did leave Scotland, he went to Morecambe, but he could have done a lot better than that. I don't want to disrespect Morecambe, but they've just been relegated into the National League, so he's I don't see him. I don't vision him leaving St Mirren anytime soon. But with it, as you said, with the budget he's got and with the constant turnover in players, and I'm a really big fan of the way goes about his business. I think the next step for him, if whenever he does decide to leave, I don't think it will be, as I said, for another couple of years, would be for like a Hearts or a Hibs, even an Aberdeen. But then this is a different style of what they play now, so but that won't be for any time soon, I don't think.
Right, listen, Morecambe is no easy job. If Derek Adams can't succeed there, then let's be honest, who can?
Who can exactly?
Let's talk about quickly before we go. Mikel Mandron, not been his year necessarily, but every so often creeps up with something pretty impressive. Do we think he may play a key part in the next year, or will they have to go shopping in the summer?
No, I'm a big fan of Mikel Mandron. I think, I know the goal record doesn't look that good on paper, but I think for what I've seen of him, he always looks innocent up front. He is eligible to play for the Scottish national team, so I think I mentioned last week to Robbie, he'd be one of the players on my short list. Oh, of course, I'm not the Scotland manager. That's me writing my CV for the third time this episode, but. He just signed that 1 year extension. St Mirren fans will be glad to hear that. I think that's another thing though. If you're not planning on selling him this summer, I know it's hard to convince players to commit their future to a 2 year deal, but we talk about these clubs not having enough money. St Mirren have got a lot of 1 year extensions in that squad. I think they've got to get at least two, and with the contingency plan being, we'll sell you next summer if you commit to this for another year. That'd be my way of investing, increasing the funds for the club. But to answer your question, I'm digressing again. But to answer your question, I think he's going to play a big part next season, especially with the loss of Alassania, and I think he'll thrive on it, to be completely honest.
No, again, it's going to be an interesting summer. I don't think any St. Mirren fans are going to be bored with the turnaround. But I think that is all that we have time for. Rounds up everything on today's episode of Scottish Football Covered. I've been Finlay, joined by Mac, as always. Now, we will be back with you. If you know, things change, but should expect Monday about 4 p.m. on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. But again, don't forget to join the conversation on Twitter at SF Covered. Enjoy the rest of your week. Hope you have a good one. And you too, Mac. Thank you for joining in. Goodbye for now.